Sports Drive at 5 rolls on this Wednesday afternoon. Thanks to General Manager Brad Treliving for joining us in the last segment. Training camp officially underway today, but on the ice for the first time tomorrow at the Scotiabank Saddledome for the Calgary Flames. Let's keep the Flames conversation going. It's Pat Steinberg, Hustler, Andrew Patterson with us in Winnipeg, and now the radio play-by-play voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our daily Calgary Flames round table. Gentlemen, and we'll start with you, Mr. Wills. Huss and I and Logan touched on this very briefly yesterday, about 3 or 4 minutes on it yesterday, so didn't get a big chance to go in depth into it. So now we do have a little bit more time to dive into it. Training camp underway. Season is just under a month away from starting for the Calgary Flames. Let's go around the table. What is the number one storyline for you heading into this year's training camp?
Well, I think, as we talked about yesterday, that the top 12 forward spots and the top 6 defense spots and probably the 2 goaltenders, if it's not written in pen, it's probably at least written in pencil at this point, if everybody's healthy. So for me, I think what I'm most curious about is who plays with who at forward. Do we see the Flames go back to the line that we saw at the end of last season with Elias Lindholm between Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk? Or with a now healthy Sean Monahan, do we see that dynamic duo of Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau reunited with a right winger who belongs in the top 6? And let's be honest, they didn't have a guy playing in that spot when they were together last season that it was a no questions asked top 6 right winger that I think they have been looking for a long time to play with Monahan and Gaudreau. So I'm anxious to see what Daryl Sutter does as far as the line combinations, especially in that top 6.
Yeah, Pat, I mean, from my perspective, we hit on this a little earlier, but it's how Daryl Sutter instills his way and his vision for this team playing night in and night out. And I think we'll see that as well with the young players that are trying to make an impression in the preseason. You know, many of these guys are familiar faces. I am certainly interested to see where Blake Coleman ends up and how that shakes out up in the top 6 and maybe what his emergence in Calgary can do with some of the other guys that, you know, had disappointing seasons last year. But honestly, this is going to be a full training camp for Daryl Sutter to come in, establish the way things are going to be from day one. And I think everyone in the organization is really counting on the Sutter effect to take a team that certainly underachieved last year and gets up to the potential that most people believe that they have.
Yeah, and it's funny because a lot of the underlying metrics really showed that the Flames took some strides in those 30 games under Daryl Sutter. And in the 30 games he was the head coach, the Flames were top 3 in possession, top 3 at 5-on-5, top 3 5-on-5 shots against, top 3 5-on-5 high danger chances against. They were in the same conversation with Colorado and Toronto in those 30 games. So they definitely took some strides. They had the puck more and they defended. They were better away from the puck under Daryl Sutter. And if that can carry over into the start of this season, that'll definitely be good news for the team. Here's mine, is even a little bit more micro, guys. I'm honed in on one player. The biggest story for me surrounding this team, and I've thought a lot about this, the biggest story is how Matthew Tkachuk plays this year. Because he's entering the final year of a contract, because his qualifying offer is $9 million at the end of this year, because he has the option to take that qualifying offer and walk right to unrestricted free agency, because he's coming off the worst year of his 5-year NHL career, just because there was this, there's this rumored or thought to be rift, or I don't even want to say rift, but feels like maybe he and coach are not on exactly the same planes or weren't last year. And Derek, knowing how important Matthew is to this team when he's on, like he was for the better part of his first 4 years in the NHL. Matthew Tkachuk's first 4 seasons in the NHL, he was so much the straw that stirred this team's drink. He was so important to this team in terms of their edge and the way they played and his versatility. And that's why it was so stark and noticeable when it dropped off the way it did last year. So to me, knowing all of what surrounds Matthew Tkachuk and the future of him with this organization, to me, that is the number one story heading into training camp and as we move throughout the season.
Yeah, I'll address both of yours. So first off with yours, Andrew, I actually think that Daryl Sutter kind of set the tone and established a culture last season when he took over. And it's something I asked him about on a number of occasions. Basically, he wanted the players to understand what was going to be expected from them off the ice and on the ice. So I think it was really important to establish that before the end of last season. And now there should be no excuses. There's no mid-season coaching change coming up for this Calgary Flames team. As far as what you said, Pat, yeah. I mean, Matthew Tkachuk on so many nights was the straw that stirred the drink for the Flames. Offensively on a lot of nights, emotionally on almost every night. He's got to be that guy again for him and for the team.
Yeah. Well, and that's just one of many storylines heading into training camp this year. And there's going to be a lot of eyes on the way things go through this camp into the preseason. And let's be honest, a lot of these things are going to follow the team, and a lot of these questions and a lot of these narratives are going to be there throughout the regular season. It's our Daily Flames Roundtable with Derek Wills, Hustler, and my name is Pat Steinberg. Here's one for you guys. The Flames do not have a captain right now. Mark Giordano is no longer with the team. He was the captain for the better part of a decade. He's now a member of the Seattle Kraken, a new Pacific Division opponent. Derek, should the Flames name a captain for the coming season?
They should only name a captain if they feel like there's a guy who deserves to wear the C. I mean, you think about the last two captains, great captains, Jerome McGinley and Mark Giordano. So if there's somebody that is ready and able to take on that responsibility, then give them the C. Let them be the captain of this hockey club. But if you don't feel like you've got the right person, or maybe you do have the right person and they're not in the right situation because they're in the final year of a contract, or they're playing in a role maybe on the third pairing or fourth line, and you don't want your captain to be playing in that spot, then don't name a captain. I suspect, based on what I heard from Brad Treloving today, that they have somebody in mind, but the dynamic in that dressing room is going to be so much different without Mark Giordano. So I think the smart move is the move I think the Flames are going to make, and that's to let training camp and the preseason play out, maybe even get into the regular season, although I have a sneaky suspicion they'll probably name somebody before October 16th. But just see who emerges. I think they have probably at least a short list right now, if not somebody written in pencil. But let's just see how it plays out. And if you've got the right guy, give him the seat.
Yeah, I have to concur with you on that one, Derek. I mean, I think that, you know, the key bit of information you dropped in there is, you know, they might have a guy, but the situation might not be right. Pat, as you mentioned, I mean, there is a lot of uncertainty as to Matthew Tkachuk's future. Because of the contract, the fact that he can walk right to unrestricted free agency. And I don't think the Calgary Flames want to name a captain and then have to turn around and do it all again when a guy potentially is not part of the team. Johnny's in the same. I'm not sure that Johnny's really captain material. I guess that's up for debate. But he's got an expiring contract, and I don't think he'll be in that situation. So, I mean, you look at this roster, Chris Tanev's a guy that I think could absolutely wear the C and be, you know, maybe not what Mark Giordano was because of his term and tenure here in Calgary, but a guy that could certainly do the job. But I'm with Derek on this one. I think they wait this one out. I don't think there's any urgency or any rush to make it happen. And I think that the captain will emerge over the course of this season. Of course, a big part of that is the future of a couple of the key top stars on the Flames is a big part of that as well.
I think I'm with you, Derek. Like I think they're going to name a captain just because that's kind of what the organization, that the history has suggested. They don't usually go full seasons without a captain. They'll, you know, when Jerome McGinley was traded to Pittsburgh, they went a little bit without a captain, and they had whatever it was, 20 games or whatever. And then the following season, Mark Giordano was named. So They've had stretches, but not full seasons without a captain. And I guess I kind of just, like, my gut says they will name a captain, but I'd be okay if they went the whole season without that happening. I really would. I don't know if there is a 100% natural choice right now. And I'd be okay with, to your point, guys, if it were to organically develop or organically happen, then of course, then if it just makes sense, it makes sense. But there was a natural choice going from Jerome McGinley to Mark Giordano. Mark Giordano was this guy who embodied hard work, who had come up the hard way. We all know his story. It was just like this natural progression from McGinley to Giordano. I don't know if I see that same natural progression right now And maybe it takes a season for that guy to really emerge. Maybe it takes a season for that player to really come into their own skin, become more comfortable with an elevated leadership role. So I don't know if you have to name a captain right now. I don't know if you need one for October 16th. I'm with you, Derek. I think they probably will, but I'd be okay. And if it were strictly me, I would lean more towards the long game when it comes to naming this organization's next captain, because there was this stretch in the 90s when it was like there's Bob Bugner and Todd Simpson, and like they went through a number of different captains. And instead of doing that, maybe you go without one for a year, and then over 82 games, maybe into the postseason, one guy just becomes clear, and yeah, you know who it is. I don't know if that's the way it's going to go, but that's kind of the way I'd lean towards it going, if I had any say in it, which I don't.
Yeah, and the other thing, guys, is you don't have to have a C or an A on your jersey to be a leader, right? And you know, I think Milan Lucic and Chris Tanev are great examples of that. And I think that both Lucic and Tanev would make great captains. The thing about Tanev, and I would probably say he's the betting favorite to be the next captain of the Calgary Flames at this point, because he's got 3 years left on his deal and he's got all the attributes that you'd want. Mm-hmm. Whereas Lucic, he isn't signed as long-term. Unlike Tanev, who's a top-pairing defenseman, Lucic is going to be a bottom six forward on this team. So if they went in one of those two directions, I don't think either one of those guys would be the wrong choice. And I know that there are a lot of fans out there that want Matthew Tkachuk to be the next captain of this team, but his contract is up at the end of this season. Now, he's still under team control. He'll be a restricted free agent, but I think you'd rather let him just focus on having a bounce-back season and a contract year. And again, Matthew Tkachuk has a letter on his jersey. He can still be a leader, or even the leader of this hockey team, even if he doesn't get named captain. So that's the direction I'd go in. I'm anxious to see what the team decides to do, though.
Yeah, there's no harm in, you know, getting an extra A out on, you know, maybe even a newer player. We'll see what happens with Blake Coleman and how he fits in over the course of training camp, and have a number of candidates, of contenders, of guys that are all leaned on to be leaders, Pat. But I'm with you. I mean, I think the Matthew Tkachuk situation, the last thing they'd want to do is go that way and then be dealing with potentially, I'm not going to say a messy situation, but, you know, a lot up in the air with his future, with him wearing the C and then being back to square one. You look at the last two captains of this club. I mean, it's been a big part of the continuity and the success that Calgary's had, going from McGinley to Giordano. And I'm with you. I don't think they want to go with changing like a revolving carousel of captains for the next 3 years until they really find their guy. And a guy that Daryl Sutter wants to be the guy wearing the C for his hockey club.
Yeah. Be an interesting story to watch as things go along this training camp. And maybe it is a decision made by the end of camp. Maybe it's not. We shall wait and see. Last topic, and it's kind of a jump off from that conversation, guys. Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Andrew Patterson. Hustler's with us from Winnipeg. My name is Pat Steinberg. So they don't have a captain right now. They also don't have Mark Giordano. And Giordano was number one in ice time last year. He was their number one power play quarterback on the blue line, and he played number one penalty kill minutes. Like he was used in the most difficult situations, and he played the most out of anybody on the team last year. So, in saying that, how do the Flames make up for his loss without taking a big step back? How does this team make sure that they can withstand the departure of Mark Giordano on the blue line?
Well, I don't think you can do it with one guy. It has to be done by committee. Mark Giordano leaves a massive hole on defense and in the dressing room as the captain. So I think you have to do it through internal growth. And when I look at the step that Noah Hanifin took last season, maybe Rasmus Anderson can take that step this season. Maybe Yusuf Alamaki can take that step this season. So I think you have to do it through external growth and then hope the guys you brought in as free agents are able to play top four, top six roles.
Yeah, how do they make up for the loss of Mark Giordano, Pat? To be frank, with great difficulty. I mean, that's a big hole on the blue line. Big minutes, the leader, the captain, as we just talked about. And I think it will be a committee. I mean, I think they're going to really lean on Tanev and Hanifin. But to me, the guy that I think has the most potential to take that next step and, you know, not necessarily be Mark Giordano, but play those big minutes and big matchups as Rasmus Anderson. And we've talked about before over the last little bit that he's a guy, it wasn't that he had a bad season, but I think there is more there for Anderson. And then you got to really cross your fingers and hope that the depth signings like Branson and obviously Stone when he's in the lineup can go in and contribute maybe more so than certainly Stone had the opportunity before Daryl Sutter took over last year.
Here's there's kind of from a just a strict hockey standpoint, there's, I guess, a few, I would say three non-negotiables for the Flames to be able to withstand the loss of their number one defenseman and not suffer in a great way. Those three non-negotiables for me are the aforementioned bounce back year from Rasmus Anderson. I think last year could be, and if you're the Flames, you're hoping that last year was a really big learning season for Rasmus, because last year was the first time he full-time took on top 4 minutes as a defenseman, played top opposition on the other side, and didn't really have his minutes sheltered, didn't really have his, you know, zone starts and type of defensive responsibility tailored. He was just used as a bona fide top four defenseman. And I think that he struggled and there was a dip in his performance. But that's kind of par for the course with young defensemen. Most young defensemen, it's rare when you get that role increased and the responsibilities increased that you don't have some growing pains that go along with it. And he did. And I thought by the end of the season, he started to look like he was turning a corner. So you hope for the bounce back season from Rasmus Anderson. I think he needs to have a big year. I think Noah Hanifin has to, at the very least, be as good as he was last year and maybe take another step. And I don't put it past a 24-year-old Noah Hanifin to take another step this year because he took a big one last year. I don't think it needs to be the massive leap that he took from 1 year to the next, from 2 years ago to last year. But another step would be nice. But at the very least, he's got to be as good as he was. And here's the one that I'm really intrigued at, Derek, because Chris Tanev was dynamite last year. He was all that he was advertised to be and more. But we're also talking about a guy who's, what, 33 years old? And so you don't know for sure whether he's going to be able to sustain the same level of play. But he needs to. Like, he needs to be as good as he was last year. So those are the three things. Tanev has to stay level as to how good he was last year. Hanifin has to do the same thing. And Anderson needs to take a big step forward. Those three things happen. And I think that you can withstand that loss of Giordano a little bit better than maybe it looks like you could on paper.
Yeah, and if you want to break it down kind of by situation, 5-on-5, it's going to have to be done by committee. So beyond that, if you look at the power play, who started as the quarterback of the first unit power play last season?
Anderson did.
Rasmus Anderson. Yeah. So if he has matured to the point and developed to the point where he can play that spot all season, then that's how you fill that role. On the penalty kill, maybe a little bit harder to do. Eric Gabranson's a defenseman who I think will get some penalty kill time. So it's not going to be easy to replace number five, but I do think the Flames have lots of depth at that position and they're probably going to need it.
I'll tell you what thing. The one guy that we haven't mentioned in all of this that might have more of an impact than anybody is Jacob Markstrom in net. A strong season from your netminder can certainly make up for some deficiencies on the blue line. Just ask Connor Hellebuck. So, with all of this, I think everything we've said about the blue liners is accurate.
Yep.
But maybe the guy that can cover up any warts or any growing pains is the guy that's going to be playing 65-plus games, presuming he's healthy in the Calgary net.
Yeah, well, and I know that Jacob Markstrom has been very adamant and very vocal about not liking the way he played last year and being motivated for a better year this year. So,
well,
no doubt about that.
If he was a sandwich, the bread would be absolutely delicious. I'm starting to sound like Peter Laborius, aren't I? But the meat of that sandwich wasn't great, but I think when he struggled last season, he was playing through that injury after that collision against his former team, the Canucks. So a healthy Jacob Markstrom was an elite goaltender for the Flames last season. So if they get that guy for a full season, yeah, that's certainly going to help them be a better hockey team. And the other guy who we haven't touched on is Nikita Zadorov. And obviously, Daryl Sutter likes those big physical defensemen that can be good in their own zone. And if Zadorov turns out to be a legitimate top four guy for the Flames, that helps close the gap as well.
Good stuff, gentlemen. Another edition of the Daily Flames Roundtable in the book. We'll do it all over again tomorrow, hopefully at regular time, Mr. Wills. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your Wednesday.
Yeah, have a good night, boys.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, daily, 4:30 p.m. Show's a little in the blender today because of the Jays. We started late, so 5:30 for the Daily Flames Roundtable today. Alongside Hustler in Winnipeg, my name is Pat Steinberg, live in the Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric Hand Controls. Burner Management, it's Iconic. Follow them on Twitter at IconicEC. Training camps are opening around the league, not just here in Calgary. We'll take a little tour from around the NHL on what we've heard today, what we've seen today. That's next as the Sports Drive at 5 transitions back to the big show next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
Or right now, Calgary Sports Talk in the evening. Welcome back to the program. Big show's going late. We didn't even start till 4:30 today. So it's Pat Steinberg and Hustlers in Winnipeg. We're going until 7 o'clock tonight. Welcome back to the program. Huss, we talked some Flames. Last hour was mostly Flames. More Flames talk coming up a little bit later on this hour. But maybe there's been some big stories, some big conversations from around the NHL and as training camps opened around the NHL. Want to dive into some of those stories as well. Most on-ice sessions starting tomorrow across the NHL. Let's start with our favorite spot of late, and that's in Vancouver. And I know that both you and I were eagerly anticipating General Manager Jim Benning's media avail this morning, specifically after Kirill Kaprizov signed his 5-year contract extension with Minnesota yesterday. And we had that chat, you, Logan, and I, about what that does to the contracts for Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. And you just knew the Vancouver media was going to be frothing at the mouth. Well, here's Jim Benning from earlier today when he was asked about those contract negotiations. Both Hughes and Pettersson remain unsigned with camp underway as restricted free agents.
You know, they're two, you know, real good young players. They're important to our organization. So, you know, we've had a lot of conversations, you know, with Pat Brisson to try to find common ground, and we'll continue to have those conversations. I think we're getting close, but, you know, we'll just continue on, and hopefully we can get it done sooner rather than later.
Okay, so Jim Benning says, I think we're getting close. Darren Dreger in contact, as you would well, as you could well decipher, with Pat Brisson, the agent for both players. Comes out and says, actually, not so close. There hasn't been any movement at all. So maybe cool your jets on just how close these two contracts are. This is a really difficult situation. When we were doing headlines earlier, Huss, I said, good luck to Vancouver. And that remains my sentiment to Jim Benning and the Canucks right now. Good luck.
This is a mess for Jim Benning and really the entire organization. Because at the bottom line is, Pat, with all the moves that they did, they got those bad contracts, they brought Connor Garland in. Maybe OEL has a great season. None of it matters a damn if they don't have Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson in their lineup right now. And you know, you look at the cap space they have, you know, they might be able to put, you know, Michael Ferland on LTIR, and maybe that helps them after the start of the season. But the bottom line is that the going rate right now for elite young players, they don't have enough money to get it done. And, you know, even if they end up in some sort of an agreement on a shorter term deal, I don't think it bodes well for their future in Vancouver if, you know, that's the way it ends up happening. And I think, man, the Canuck fan base is losing it right now, and that, you know, they finally get two incredibly talented young players, and yet they're the guys that are missing at the beginning of camp after everything else that they've done. And we went through a number of Benning's offseason moves. I mean, it blows my mind that they felt that they would go and give Travis Hamonic $3 million a year and give Tucker Pullman $2.5 million a year with term before having some sort of clarity as to what should have been the absolute number one priority.
Yeah.
And that's Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. And I know Jim put on a brave face today and said he feels that they're close. I'm not sure whether Hughes and Pettersson feel that they're close. And this is going to be, I mean, you described it as a black cloud. It is a storm right now over Vancouver, and everything that happens on the ice and in the preseason is going to be secondary to what happens when Jim Benning gets on the phone with Pat Brisson and tries to get something done with both of these young players.
It's just, and I'm not trying to say, I told you so. I'm not trying to troll, but whenever we've talked over the last couple of years about Vancouver's poor cap management, we always get the displaced West Coasters and the Canuck fans saying, you guys don't know what you're talking about. They'll be fine. How far have the Flames gone the last few years? Like, this has nothing to do with the Flames. This has everything to do with Jim Benning has done a really poor job of the most important thing in running a hockey team, and that is managing your salary cap. And the different signings that have been from Louis Erickson to Jay Beagle to Antoine Roussel, even the they had Braden Holtby for 1 year and bought him out. Like, it just, there has not been any semblance of competent cap management over the last half decade in Vancouver. And we all knew what was coming. We all saw that these two potential superstars, the Canucks, to their credit, drafted, were coming up to be signed. We all saw it coming. We saw it coming when they signed Brock Besser to a bridge deal. And we saw it coming when they went out and made their moves the last couple of summers. We saw it coming when they made their completely hard, like almost impossible to fathom move to acquire Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And now here they are with $10 million of cap space. And I get, scream at me all you want about what they're going to be able to do with Michael Ferland and his LTIR. Okay, that adds a little bit more breathing room. I still don't know if that's enough to get both guys signed without significant roster surgery. Like, this is a mess, and it's a mess by their own design, Huss. It's not as if this is some bad luck or circumstances. This is a mess everybody was calling for, everybody knew was coming, and Jim Benning willingly, I don't even want to put it all on him, because he's got people that he answers to, and he's got a very clear mandate from old Mr. Aquilini. But the Canucks put themselves in this spot.
Yeah, I mean, at some point you make your bed and you got to sleep in it. I mean, that's what's happening right now with Jim Benning. I mean, you talk about roster surgery, Pat. I mean, they need $4, $5, $6 million of space if they want to get these guys done. And best thing that could possibly happen for this organization is to get these guys done long-term with cost certainty and buying up UFA years. The only way I can possibly imagine that happening in the next little while would be to move one of three players, Brock Besser, Bo Horvat, or JT Miller, all in excess of $5 million. Besser's an RFA at the end of the year. Both Horvat and Miller have one more year of term. I mean, if you do that, you're losing a very important player in your top six as well. So, I mean, he backed himself into a corner. And, you know, I made the comparison. I'm not sure what show I was on talking about it, but 2 years ago in Winnipeg, Kevin Cheveldayoff had to deal with Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine as RFAs. And in a lot of ways, it paralyzed them through the offseason. There was a lot of things that the Jets wanted to do that they just simply weren't able to do because they knew they had to get these players signed. And it took right up until this point to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't add a bunch of other players that made it impossible to do that. And that's where Vancouver is right now. And again, I know there'll be some people, there will be some cap gymnastics, and maybe they have to wait till after the first day of the season. That's a hell of a way to start the year, having your top players miss camp and then expect them to just pick up where they left off. Listen, they've done a number of things that I'm sure some people are excited about. Connor Garland's a heck of a player. But when it comes to managing their cap, knowing full well that they had to get Elias and Quinn Hughes signed this summer, they're no further along. In fact, they might be further away from getting it done today because of the other moves that have happened.
I remember draft day, and I remember when Vancouver made that deal with Arizona to acquire Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And I was wondering to myself, what are you doing? Not like, okay, you can tell me all you want. You got rid of all those contracts and you rid yourself of Beagle. You rid yourself of Erickson. I understand they got rid of contracts, but in the end, they gave themselves next to no cap relief because they still took on the $7+ million of Oliver Ekman-Larsson's cap hit. And by doing that and then signing Connor Garland, who I do like the acquisition of Garland. I think that he'll be a nice fit on that Canucks team. But by doing that, you gave yourself no cap relief. You got rid of those bad contracts that were expiring in 1 year, and then you took on a significantly worse contract for a 30-year-old defenseman who has not played good hockey for the last 2 or 3 years and still has 7 years remaining at $7.26 million. So you took on one of the worst contracts in the NHL. You got rid of contracts that were expiring in 1 year that you were going to get out under from, and you put yourself in a spot where you're now not getting out from under them. So not only have they put themselves in a bad spot this year, but it's not like they're sitting in Candyland going forward either.
No, I mean, it doesn't get any brighter. I mean, sure, the cap recapture for Lou goes off the books after this year, but you know what they've got on the books next year? $1.9 million for Braden Holtby and $500,000 for Jake Virtanen. And this just goes back to some of the other decisions that they've made. But, I mean, I thought at the beginning when they made that deal, wow, they got rid of all those terrible contracts that had been weighing them down. But the other part of the dominoes falling was bringing on 7 more years of OEL at in excess of $7 million, bringing Connor Garland in and signing him to $5 million a year. So, it's a flat cap. Everyone knew that was happening. And while we're seeing other general managers getting things done, Rasmus Dahlin in Buffalo, Kaprizov yesterday, the Kachuk situation in Ottawa still out there, it's an entirely different story in Vancouver.
Yep.
Because of the importance of the players, the production of the players, what they legitimately would get on the market as RFAs. And I got to tell you, I do not envy Jim Benning. It'd be great to see the text line of our friends at the Sportsnet station out in Vancouver after what he had to say today.
So from Vancouver, we go to Toronto, a Maple Leafs team who also opened training camp today. They're coming off a hugely disappointing playoff exit in round one against Montreal. They had the 3-1 series lead, and then they lost in 7 games. Here's GM Kyle Dubas on that and coming in to a brand new season.
We can look back and learn from it, but we only control what we do today and every day moving forward. So I don't think we can hide from it and run from it. I just think that we have to do everything we can as an organization to be ready for when those moments come again, that we're as prepared as possible. And what I've learned about this group in the last 3.5 months is that they care tremendously about, rather than proving all of that stuff wrong, they care about proving themselves and what they're about right.
So that's all fine and good, Huss, and I imagine that Kyle Dubas and the Maple Leafs are doing everything in their power to put last year behind them and focus only on in front of them. But good luck doing that in that market. Good luck having, you can be as insulated as you want to be. You can not go on Twitter, the internet, look at your phone, you're still going to hear about it. And that narrative of the Maple Leafs being disappointing, of the Maple Leafs failing in the playoffs again, and this core group not being able to win meaningful games, that is going to follow the Toronto Maple Leafs for 82 games, and it's going to follow them as they better make the playoffs in that market. Good luck getting away from it. Good luck focusing only on this season in Toronto, because that noise is cranked to 15.
Yeah, it ain't happening, Pat. I mean, when you think about the way they flamed out last year as massive favorites against the Montreal Canadiens, up 3-1 in the series, it's inescapable. And, I mean, it particularly hangs over a few players, and Mitch Marner is at the top of the list. I mean, for a guy that has been so productive over his NHL career, I mean, a hell of a player, for him to disappear the way he did when everything was on the line, especially in Game 7, is something that he's not skating away. He's not escaping anytime soon. And, you know, they might have the media in Toronto play nice with them and try and focus on other things. Good luck selling that to the fans, because this is a good team, but they're paying a ton of money to 4 players. And when you have that sort of paycheck, it comes with some responsibility. And let's not forget, Maple Leaf fans remember the way Mitch Marner and his representatives and the family, some will say, bent that team over and squeezed them for every single dollar. And hey, we can say it's a business. He did what he had to do and he got a great deal. That's all fine and dandy. But if you come up small when things really count, you are going to hear about it. And yep. This is not something that they're ever going to escape. until they're shaking hands and moving on to the second round as opposed to making tee times.
Crazy that this group, as good as they've been, as much regular season success as they've had, and with the individual success in those regular seasons, whether it be Marner or Matthews or Tavares or Riley, and yet they still haven't been able to get over. It's actually hard to believe a team that talented has failed as much as they have in the postseason. And then there's the question about, you know, where's Austin Matthews and is he going to be ready? The Maple Leafs say that he's going to be ready to start the season, but that's also something that is going to have to be taken into account. So, yeah, the Maple Leafs have fun trying to get away from that noise all year long.
One other thing on the Leafs quickly, and you know, again, and part of it comes with the territory. I mean, everyone is so focused on Matthews and Marner and Tavares and Nylander. You know, they were all in last year. I mean, they spent a first round pick to get Foligno. They made a bunch of deals. A lot of those guys are gone. And I mean, the bottom six is sort of a work in progress. I mean, there's a lot of players. Nick Ritchie's there. David Camp's there with an opportunity to, you know, on a 2-year deal. Andre Kasha, Pierre Engvall. I mean, I think there's some major questions about the rest of the Leafs roster once you get past those big four that are making that massive, massive chunk of their cap.
Yep.
They've got a lot of work to do and a team to build because it's not just about those four players, despite the fact that, you know, the fans and the media often obsess about them.
Yeah, see how it all goes in Toronto this year. It's going to be an interesting year in that market, no doubt about it. One of the big stories, Huss, around the league, we talked a little bit about it yesterday with Zach Rinaldo. That was the first name that came to the forefront. Another couple of names today. One of them has not been confirmed by the organization, but a lot of people are making the jump about Flames prospect Tyler Parsons not coming to camp because, as the team says, unable to satisfy quarantine protocols. But the team is not confirming nor denying whether or not that is about being vaccinated or not vaccinated. The Detroit Red Wings have confirmed that Tyler Bertuzzi will not be getting vaccinated and thus will not be playing games in Canada this year. That is going to affect his bottom line. I think estimates suggest around $400,000 is what it'll cost him for not being able to play the games that the Red Wings are scheduled to play in this country. Even Duncan Keith in Edmonton, the Oilers have one player that is not been identified but will not be getting vaccinated. Duncan Keith isn't joining his new team until the beginning of October because he just decided to get his shot. I'm not even being critical here, Huss. I'm really not. We don't need to get into the political conversation. Of course, I know it's going to happen on our text line because we're talking about vaccines, but yes, to the stick to sports crowd, we are sticking to sports. This vaccine issue has carried over into the sporting world and has turned into a significant issue and a significant hurdle in some ways for different players and different teams. This is no longer just a non-sports issue.
Well, it's a hurdle, I guess, but it's completely self-inflicted. I mean, it's not like anyone's forcing these guys not to do it. And I'll be honest. I mean, I have a hard time wrapping my head around walking away from $400,000 and my team. Let's not forget, this is a team sport because I don't want to get that shot. It's an interesting hill to die on, I'll say that. And there are going to be some guys whose careers, in fact, die on this hill. And as we said yesterday, you know, it's going to be really interesting over the next few days to see this very small group of NHLers that aren't vaxxed, you know, reportedly between 10 and 15 players, according to Bill Daly, and how it's handled. I mean, we heard how Lou Lamoriello was handling it yesterday in New York. He said, yeah, everyone here that's participating is going to be vaccinated. And the one guy that's not, we're looking to send him to Europe. Now, I don't think all the teams will take as hard a line. But honestly, from a player, I mean, if you're a third or fourth liner and like whoever it is in Edmonton, is going to miss 30 games and potentially playoff games as well.
Apparently our friends up at 630 Ched in Edmonton, the radio voice, the radio home of the Oilers, they've identified it as Josh Archibald is the player that choosing not to get vaccinated.
Like, listen, if it's Mike Smith or Connor McDavid, maybe they're having a little bit of a different conversation. But I'll tell you what, if you want to do your best to expedite your exit from the National Hockey League, this is a way to do it. And you know what? Hey, it's not a lot different than, you know, many people in other industries. I mean, if you're in the airline industry, you have to get the shot. I mean, if you're working with kids, you got to get the shot. I mean, all these sorts of things. So it's no different. Maybe NHLers or a very small amount of NHLers have the wherewithal to, as I said, die on that hill. But it's a brutal situation for the teams to have to deal with. And if it goes throughout the season, I mean, it will be an incredible pain in the, you know what, for the head coaches and management. And to be honest, Pat, I think it's a big, big advantage when you hear your general manager come out and say, we're all in, we're getting down to business. We don't even have to worry about this because everyone is on the same page with your organization. And the teams that aren't or have to deal with it, I do think are at a competitive disadvantage when we drop the puck for game one of 82.
For sure they are, for sure. And look, I don't think Detroit was expected to fight for a playoff spot this year, but you know, like that's a pretty important player on the Red Wings. Tyler Bertuzzi is a pretty important player to that group. And you know, if it goes back to what I said about Ronaldo yesterday, this is, I fully respect every single person's ability to choose. But what I have a hard time wrapping my head around is Josh Archibald looking at Connor McDavid, looking at Leon Draisaitl, looking at Darnell Nurse. Darnell Nurse is like a freak of nature athlete. This man could play football. This man could play basketball. This man could play cricket. This, like, Darnell Nurse would excel at the highest level at any sport in the world. And this guy has chosen to get get the vaccine. And you're looking at these players who are your leaders. You're looking at these players who are better than you as NHLers. And you're saying, well, I know more than you guys do. And like, I cannot wrap my head around that particular part of it. That's the area that is so difficult for me to understand. And that's just me being honest. I'm not even being critical. I can't put myself in somebody's shoes and say, oh, Connor McDavid, you're getting vaccinated. No, I'm not. I know better than you. You're the best player in the NHL. You're fine, but I know better than you. That's hard for me. Really hard.
Have a good road trip, Connor. Come back with some points. I'm going to be chilling here thinking about my future. I mean, are you serious? Most of us, I think, don't get it. Most people have bought in. But this is not about society. This is about professional hockey, the best league in the world, the best job in the world. And to think that some guys are going to be walking away from big parts of their salary and undoubtedly put their NHL future in peril unless they are a real star player and teams will kind of hold their nose and deal with them. As I said, I think most people have a hard time understanding those decisions, but it is their decisions. And with those decisions come consequences. And teams like Edmonton and Detroit right now are the first ones that are having to deal with it at training camp.
Unfortunately, this is something that COVID isn't necessarily going away anytime soon. And neither is this vaccine debate. And it is permeated into NBA conversations, NFL conversations, and now NHL conversations. Unfortunately, it's not going away as much as a lot of people would like it to be going away. There are so many different ways to listen to Sportsnet 960 The Fan. You can get it on your radio, of course, 960 on your AM dial. Stream it on your phone, tablet, computer at sportsnet.ca/960. You can get it on your smart speaker. Tell it to play Sportsnet 960. Download the Radio Player Canada app. Download the Sportsnet app, or when you're listening to Flames Radio, you can get us on SiriusXM Satellite, the Flames app, or the NHL app. So many different ways to listen to Sportsnet 960. Alongside Hustler, my name is Pat Steinberg. We're going to focus on a pair of Flames players up next, both coming off late season surgery, both crucial to the team's success this year. It's a late edition of The Big Show, and it continues next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
All right, we got a couple player updates from GM Brad Treliving earlier today. Those two players, Noah Hanifin and Sean Monahan. Welcome back to the program. My name is Pat Steinberg. Hustler's with us in Winnipeg. Here's the GM with the latest on those two. Hanifin had shoulder surgery late in the season. Monahan had hip surgery late in the season. So what is their status as training camp kicks off on the ice tomorrow?
Both are ahead of of schedule. We don't anticipate any barriers. Now, we're going to take it slow with them. They'll both be full participants. Now, I say that they're going through, we're getting all the medical stuff done today. We don't anticipate them being any, we anticipate them being full participants in camp. Now, we're still talking. We've spent a lot of time talking about how many preseason games they get into. I think we'll monitor that and probably get them into more at the back half of the schedule than on the front half. So both are doing well. Both are ahead of schedule. We don't anticipate any issues with training camp or them starting the season.
For very different reasons, Huss, those two guys are going to be crucial for the Flames this year. Absolutely crucial. Let's start with Hanifin. We talked in the Daily Flames Roundtable an hour ago about, look, Mark Giordano's not here, and there hasn't been anybody that has just been brought in to replace Mark Giordano player for player, which was going to be hard to do regardless. But Hanifin, for this team to be able to not take a significant step back on the back end, this is just my opinion, but I think Hanifin needs to be as good as he was last year and maybe needs to take another step forward, which he did 2 years ago to last year, and the Flames hoping that he does again this year. But at the very least, he needs to be at the high level he was at last year. And, you know, we'll see what the recovery from shoulder surgery is like when he gets into preseason games, so on and so forth. But that guy is going to be a massive, crucial piece for this team's success this year.
Absolutely no doubt about it. And I mean, this goes back to the Seattle expansion draft and losing Captain Mark Giordano with a year left on his deal. And I mean, when you look at the Flames blue line, I mean, that top four right now, Pat, you know, are going to be leaned on a lot. For a guy like Hanifin at his age, though, it's a huge opportunity. I mean, to be, you know, to continue establish himself as a, you know, a top pairing defenseman in the National Hockey League. And, you know, he'll have a great partner to do it with, but I'm with you. I mean, you know, the loss of Giordano affects the team in so many ways, and no one's expecting him to roll in and slap the C on his chest and be Mark Giordano. But with the minutes that they're losing on the blue line and the roles and the responsibility, I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, a young, talented defenseman like Noah Hanifin is going to be leaned on, but also has a really excellent opportunity to, you know, continue to establish himself as a go-to guy for Calgary. Because, man, they're going to need it. And it's not just him, but I think he's at the top of the list for a guy that has the potential to be that difference maker that they'll need in the absence of their former captain.
I'm feeling pretty confident that this is going to be something that happens. Like, I'm feeling pretty confident that Hanifin will have another good year. I was really encouraged prior to the shoulder injury. I was pretty encouraged with the way that he was playing. Once he was taken away from the pairing with Chris Tanev, he still did a nice job anchoring a pairing once he was put with Rasmus Anderson. So that gave me a lot of encouragement that it wasn't just a product of playing with Tanev for Hanifin last year. It was him too. He took some really big steps. So I'm feeling pretty confident that he's going to be able to do that. The other one is Monahan. And this one, I'm not as confident on, just because we're talking about a guy that has been in decline or has had some down seasons the last 2 years and a bit, and is coming off another hip surgery. And there have been a lot of surgeries, a lot of off-season medical procedures for Monahan the last few years. He did not look right for most of the year prior to or after when kind of the rough date of when the injury happened. I'm not as confident that we're going to see it with Monahan. I'm not saying that it's impossible, but I don't think my confidence level is as high with him as it is with Hanifin. But he is coming off his worst professional season. And he is a guy that prior to last year was kind of a slam dunk for 20 to 30 goals a year. If he does bounce back, then the Flames all of a sudden become a much deeper group. I don't know, like, we talked in the roundtable about Tkachuk, but in terms of just how things slot for this team and how the team looks up and down their depth chart, I don't know if there's a more fascinating player in a lot of ways than Sean Monahan, because he turns them into a significantly harder team to play against if he's back closer to career form this year.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they don't even need the 34-goal and 82-point guy from 18-19. I mean, if you could just get the guy that's, you know, quality two-way player, scoring over 20, being able to contribute in a number of different areas. You know, I think Calgary's a step ahead. But if he struggles, to your point, Pat, if he struggles the way that he did for long stretches last season, that is a bad news for the Calgary Flames. Hey, we've talked a lot about the cap and a lot about the, you know, the cap crunch in a lot of spots. When you're paying a guy up front to be a top six player and you're paying him in excess of $6 million, you need that production. And a bounce back season for Sean Monahan, I'm sure, has been on the mind of Daryl Sutter throughout the offseason, what they need to do to put him into a position to succeed. But also it's on the player. And, you know, he's got 2 years left on his deal. I think it's a huge deal, a huge year for him personally as well, for his future in the National Hockey League. He'll certainly be there. But is he a guy that we've talked about as, you know, a top six guy, a center that there's demand for around the league? We're going to find out this season. And his personal success will be directly linked, I think, to whether the Calgary Flames can bounce back from what was such a disappointing season last year.
It was. Here's a little bit more from the GM from earlier this morning as he spoke to media to kind of kick off training camp this year and was asked about, you know, what is going to be different this year with essentially the same group of players as we saw last year.
I think we have players that underperformed. You know, when you have a tough season, I know you all write about everything's got to be blown up and everybody's got to be shipped out of town and bring in 20 new players. That's not reality. We have players that I think can play at a higher level than they played at last year. So it's like every other team, internal growth and internal improvement. And then I think we've brought in some people that can do some very specific jobs. But I think every team every year is a little bit different. I think people will say there's been no changes here. There could be anywhere from 7 to 8 new players. That's quite a few different players. So I think as you go through camp, that team's got to establish its identity. You got to find out who plays with who. And so those are the things that will be different, as I think, you know, players, for the most part, that were here last year, I think can play and attain a higher level.
And that's kind of what it comes down to. And Brad kind of talked about that when he joined us a little earlier in the show to kick off the 5 o'clock hour, Huss. In a lot of ways, look, I think it's very well documented that they tried to make bigger moves than were made. They tried to shake up the team more than what was actually accomplished. But whether you look at it as those weren't there, or they were going to get fleeced in deals, or they couldn't get it done, however you choose to look at it, they didn't transpire. But so now they're rolling it back with essentially the same group at forward, add Blake Coleman, essentially the same group on defense, minus Mark Giordano, and they're looking to have better results. And we talked a lot about bounce back, but he talked a lot about internal growth. That's what it comes down to. You're essentially rolling it back with the same group and looking for things to be different than they were, drastically different than they were last year. And I don't think anybody knows how that's going to end up working.
No, and the guys we just mentioned are going to have a huge, huge role in that. You know, I always come back to Markstrom. Because I do think, and I know he had that rough stretch after being hurt through the season, but I do think he has the makings of a horse that can go and really provide Calgary the goaltending that they're going to need. And that if you don't get goaltending, you're not winning and you're not making the playoffs in the National Hockey League. So I guess that sort of goes without saying. Hanifin on the blue line, the responsibility that have been on his shoulders, how he responds to that. But maybe more than anything, if they can get Sean Monahan to resemble the player that Flames fans enjoyed for the first 6-7 years of his career, as opposed to the real struggles he had last year.
Yeah.
To me, that might go farther than anything to having the Flames right in the mix to be playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs in the spring.
Final thing I wanted to play from the GM was what is the future of the captaincy on this team? We talked about this a little bit on the Daily Flames Roundtable. If you're just joining us, just a quick refresh on that. Here's what the GM had to say when asked about if the team is looking to name a new captain with Mark Giordano no longer in the fold.
I think we're going to let training camp, There won't be any announcements today. There won't be any announcements tomorrow. We're going to let this thing sort of play out. And I think organically, this has got a, it's a really big decision. I don't think you name a captain just so that you check a box and you say that you have that stroked off the list. I think that's – so Darryl and I have talked a lot about it. I think that's something that's going to have to play itself out over camp, and we'll see where we are in, over the coming days.
That is what general manager Brad Treliving had to say about the captaincy. It's kind of my feel that, you know what, if they were to go the full year, Huss, without naming a captain, it's okay. There's I don't think there is that natural no-questions-asked guy. You can make arguments for a lot of guys. You can say, well, this guy could be a fit or that guy could be a fit. I could name you Lucic and Tanev and Tkachuk and Backlund. I could make a case for Gaudreau if you really wanted. Like, you could go in a lot of different directions. But when they made the transition after the Jerome Iginla trade and they went without a captain for 20 games or so and then decided to go with Mark Giordano the following season, that was easy. That was staring them in the face. It was one of the easiest decisions about the organization has ever made, because Giordano's role, Giordano's path, the work ethic, all of it, it was just, hey, this guy's the next captain. This guy embodies all of what you'd want to be in a captain, so on and so forth. I don't know if that guy, the same voice, necessarily exists right this instant. And I don't know if that just completely develops and cements itself over 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks of training camp. It might take an entire season. And if they were to go an entire year without a captain, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world.
I don't either. And if I'm Brad Treliving right now, I'm not rushing into anything. And a big part of that is the situations with a couple of their top guys, specifically Matthew Tkachuk, and what happens at the end of this season, the qualifying offer, the potential of unrestricted free agency, and where he fits in the team's future. Let me turn this to you, Pat, because, I mean, you know this team as well as anyone. Give me your candidates for this. I mean, I think of Chris Tanev as a veteran player that could go in and be that role if they really felt that they needed one right now. But considering the situations of some of the other guys that I think logically would be the candidates, I'd be interested to see, your most likely guys, if they were going to go that route, either right now or a few months into the season, sometime this year, who is that guy?
My betting favorite would be Tanev. Because he signed for 3 more years. He kind of has the same, in a lot of ways, the same qualities as Giordano. Hard work, not the most traditional path to the NHL. He lays every single part of him on the line every single time he's out there. So he would be the one that would be my betting favorite. I'd put him at like minus 350 or something like that if I were to start making odds on who the next captain would be. I think Lucic would be kind of in the runner-up spot. Backlund would be an interesting one. You know, Tkachuk would be a dark horse, but as you mentioned last hour, he does not have a contract beyond this year. You don't know what the future holds there. So I would think, like, if you were naming one before October 16th, I think it would be Tanev. But I could see a number of different things happening if you let it go a little bit longer than that. If you let it go a year, like, I could paint you a picture where Sean Monahan is the captain. Like say Monahan has this big bounce back year and all of a sudden he throws himself into even more being a two-way player. He goes 24 goals, 29 assists, has whatever that would be, 53 points, but wins 57% of his faceoffs, is that much better defensively, and then goes into the postseason, helps them win a round and having the best playoffs he's ever had. I'm not saying this is going to happen, but there's a way that you're like, oh, you know what? Sean Monahan leaned into being a leader on this team. There's your next captain. There's a guy that we think embodies the C, and okay, Johnny Gaudreau signs a new contract. And he now signs for 6-7 years, and you go, hey, Johnny, we now believe that you have grown into your role as a franchise player on this team. We want to give you that extra little nudge. Here's the captaincy. How about Elias Lindholm? Lindholm drives the bus in so many different ways. He is a quiet guy, but man, if I see Lindholm playing the two-way game, if I see Lindholm doing everything right every single time he's on the ice, and then all of a sudden, maybe he leans into more of a leadership role without Mark Giordano there this year. Why not Elias Lindholm? Why not him as a guy? But it would take a little bit more time to develop, I think. So there's just a few examples I could throw at you, Huss, of different guys that could come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, and you know, and I love Lidholm. I mean, I think he is such a great player. I haven't been around him like you have, so I mean, I'd be remiss to say that I know that he is the type of guy you might want on the captain, because I just don't have the exposure to him. But I will say this, he is the type of player that I think is what you want in a captain. And as far as what you said about Monahan, I mean, I agree. But, I mean, there was a lot of ifs there, Pat. I mean, we've just been talking about how badly they need this bounce back season for him. I don't think he's in the position right now before he shows that and really turns it around that I think they'd be that guy. You know, Lucic, do you want a captain that, you know, is playing, you know, in your bottom six and not contributing like many of the other guys? I'm not sure. I go back to what you said and we discussed right off the top. If they feel the need that they want to do it right now, and they want to have a clear leader, I mean, to me, Tanev is the logical choice. But beyond that, there's a lot of things that have to fall into place. And to me, I sort of think it's Tanev or a waiting game and see who steps up this season and shows Daryl Sutter that he should be the next captain of the Calgary Flames.
Now that we talked about it, and he does not get brought up a ton, because I think that Lindholm, everything he does is just quiet and understated. But it's quietly and understatedly outstanding. Everything he does the right way. And on the ice, off the ice, people rave about him off the ice. On the ice, I mean, he's physical. He'll throw a hit. He's extremely responsible defensively. He is good for 25, 30 goals in a year. He's a penalty killer. He's on the power play. I'm on Team Lindholm now. Now that I think about it, Team Lindholm is where I am, and it kind of, you know, we're talking about this developing organically, and there it just developed organically from this conversation. I think Lindholm would be a really good choice, and I don't know if you make that choice by October 16, but maybe you make that choice by next October, or maybe you make that choice halfway through or something like that. But now that we've talked about it, Huss, I really like that idea.
Yeah, I think that he does check a lot of the boxes. And, you know, National Hockey League teams, I mean, it's not out of the blue to have, you know, a European captain. I mean, there's been many of them before. You know, it's such an international game that, you know, many teams would say that might be a positive for it. At the end of the day, you need a leader. And, you know, from everything I've seen of Lindholm on the ice, he does all of those things that you want. And I think he quietly is sort of a Daryl Sutter type player. They can play in all of those situations. And the bottom line is lead by example. I mean, everything you just said about Lindholm in a lot of ways reminds me about Paul Stastny. And we've heard Stastny everywhere he's gone has been a part of the leadership group. And, you know, here in Winnipeg, you know, Blake Wheeler's the guy. He's at the captain on his chest ever since Andrew Ladd left, and that's not changing. But you talk to people around the team, and, you know, in some ways, Stastny is like a second captain. Well, if Blake Wheeler left, like what happened to Mark Giordano, you would be talking about who's the logical guy to go in. Now, they've got, you know, a number of players in different situations that the Flames are, and you might logically go to a star player like a Mark Scheifele. But Paul Stastny, a quiet leader, has so much respect. And I really do think that Lindholm has that from his teammates as well as other players in the league. And he certainly would be a guy if they wanted to make that decision sooner as opposed to later, which I think would be getting some legitimate consideration within the organization.
Look at that. We just organically started the Lindholm.
Solved the problem.
We did. You know what? I'll take my check right now. You can hire me full time, right? Hire both of us. You can work remotely from Winnipeg, and I jest, but I like that idea quite a bit. Solving problems all the time. Okay, so tomorrow, show's coming at you live from the Scotiabank Saddledome. We'll be there for day one of training camp tomorrow. The kind of main NHL group is at 11. The prospect group is at 9. And kind of the fringe-ish group is coming in at around 1 o'clock. And, you know, there's some interesting names there. Mackey's there. Pelche's there. Zary's there. So there's some interesting names in the 1 o'clock group. But the main NHL group to start is at 11 a.m. Really curious as to what the line combos and pairings are coming out of that one. So Thursday, we're live at the Scotiabank Saddledome. But Friday, we are off to zero latency for the first time. We're We're hanging out with Calgary's first virtual reality gaming space, and this is an awesome spot. The Big Show is back in YYC, and Zero Latency is the spot for Friday. You can check out their fully licensed lounge, their pub-style menu, and a whole lot more. Calgary's first virtual reality gaming space with that fully licensed lounge, pool tables, mini arcade, and more. Visit ZLOnTilt.com. ZLOnTilt.com. Friday, join us, Zero Latency, for the Big Show. Back to wrap next, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.